Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to episode 111 of Double Hop Beat, where we take the pulse of the beer and brewing scene. I'm James, a home brewer and craft beer enthusiast.
And I'm Shannon, a beer intermediate. This week, we are joined by Chris from Calculated Risk Brewing. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good, thanks. We're excited you can join us. We first connected with you because you actually messaged us on our Instagram. So thanks for DMing us. Appreciate it. When we did our canning episode, you just let us know that there are actually adapters for those 300 ml and 500 ml cans for the new canner that James got. So thanks for letting us know.
Oh, no problem. I have the same canner. So I didn't know at first that they had trucks for them. And I bought some Keglin cans off of old homebrew guy of mine, and I was like, oh, great cans. And I'm like, oh shoot, I think these are like 500 milliliters.
Did you do the whole thing where you put the cans next to each other and you're like, oh shit?
Oh, I was like, I'm looking at the October box. I'm like, I don't think this is right. And I'm like, went on the website and I saw they had the chucks for the 300 and the 500s, and they have like a bunch of other chucks for that canner. So I was like, oh, all right, well, I guess I lucked out because I can go buy a truck for it.
Yeah, it's good to know. It's a good tip for everyone else too, looking at that canning system, that it's a possibility. Okay, well, we just will jump right into, as we ask all of our guests, our first question is, how'd you get into homebrewing? Tell us your story.
So probably about like 10 years ago. It was so random because I actually saw like a Facebook post about me just posting like, oh, thinking about brewing my own beer. This is literally about like 10, 11 years ago. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's like 11 years ago I thought about it. And then like, I didn't do anything for like 5 years. I just like look stuff up. You know, you get kind of like, I don't want to say intimidated, but like, it's all, thank you. It is a big pile of knowledge that you just dive right into. And a buddy of mine, his brother and his friend, homebrew, and they're both like chemists and stuff like that. So I'm like, oh, Jesus, these guys are chemists. This is how it's done. Like, it's all this confusing. I went over to their apartment. They had a grandfather system, and they're like sitting there just brewing the beer. And I'm like, oh, this is easy. I was like, I can do this. I totally thought it was going to be like a whole like science experiment going on. We're just two guys drinking beer, looking at beer getting made. And I was like, all right, I can do this. And then 2018, that's when I brew my own beer at my house.
Very nice. So yeah, realized it wasn't as crazy as it seemed with all the overwhelming information.
Oh, so much. The way some of the videos are on YouTube and spitting out all these new words and phrases, and you're like, what does this mean? The yeast has to attenuate by like 69%, you know, like, what's going on here?
Didn't know you're going to have to use your math skills.
When do we not talk about math? Okay. Every single episode's math, 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 numbers, numbers, numbers. Why?
Because it's just part of the process, James.
It really is. But the good thing is there's a lot of programs out there that you can actually do the math for you. So it comes in handy.
That's true. Yeah. That's the lazy man's way, which is how I like it. So I don't like my lobster that way, but I do like my math that way.
Yeah, I run a brewfather and a beersmith just because, you know, for what you pay a year for them, I like to have the, you know, see what they both push. I usually just use the Brewfather app and go from there.
And so when you first
piece and stuff.
Yeah. So when you first started brewing, did you start out with the typical brew bucket, or did you have a system that you started to brew on?
So when I started brewing, I actually dived right in. There's no like Mr. Beer or any extract. I went straight into like all grain brewing right from the beginning. So I went out, I bought myself a mill, I built the kettle out of a keg, and then I, you know, did a mash tun out of a 70 quart cooler and just moved on from there for my first brew day. Just brewed it outside like everybody else. Didn't know what to brew, so looked online at certain recipes, and I came up with to do a Hefeweizen for my first recipe. I thought, you know, it's like 2 or 3 grains and that's it.
How'd that turn out?
It is probably the worst beer I've ever had.
That is not an uncommon response to the first beer that anybody ever brews. So
I also feel like homebrewers are the most honest people in the world, where you're not going to be like, oh yeah, it was really good. And then it's like, no, it really wasn't. You're going to be like, yep, that beer was terrible.
Yep. That is true.
I gave it to my buddy and his brother, and I'm like, hey, what do you think? And he'd be like, this is horrible. Yeah, I know. Something happened. I don't know if it got infected or I was fermenting out of kegs. I fermented out of kegs and stuff like that. So it was just a whole debacle. And long story short, I was just like, all right, I can make a better beer.
Yeah. Challenge accepted.
Make a better beer. Yeah, challenge accepted. Let's go.
So how did you progress from there with your setup? What are you brewing on now?
Right now, I still have the kettle that I built, but now it's a three-vessel Hearns electric. I wanted to brew in the wintertime, and I was like, in the Northeast, it's like, gets really cold, and I'm I don't want to brew outside, nor do I want to brew in my garage and get carbon monoxide poisoning. So yeah. I was like, all right, let's switch. I went from that to a rim system that I built out of two coolers and the kettle, and then finally I got two or three other kegs from some friends, and then I just built the Herm system out of that, and then I've been running that system for about 3.5 years now, I think.
And so one of the common debates I hear all the time and see on all the forums is between Herms and Rims, and people switching between, or you have the Herms loyalists and you have the Rims loyalists. Now, if you have been brewing on both, what's your preference and why?
I would probably say Herms is my preference more just because of your overshoot on your temperature. It doesn't really go too crazy, maybe a half a degree off when it's coming in and coming out. I think with the rims, it's just that element's always firing and direct contact with the wort, so it could be a lot more scorching going on. So I think you get a little bit, it takes a little bit longer because you have to heat the water, and then the water heats the coil, and the coil heats the wort. But I think it's a little bit more a safer bet if you're doing that type of system. Pretty soon I'm actually going to be switching over to a brew in a bag.
Okay.
I'm going to be getting a custom-made one for my homebrew buddy in my homebrew club. He owns a homebrew shop here in New Jersey.
Nice. That's really nice that you get to, like, yeah, support a friend and also, like, help, you know, a homebrew shop that's, a brick-and-mortar store, which is really rare these days.
Yeah, he does all the online stuff. He does all the upgrades that you need with the welding and everything. So I'm going to actually go to him and have one made out of like a 30-gallon Blickman, and then start doing that, only because almost everybody in my home brew club brew in a bag, and it just seems it's a lot quicker nowadays, like a little bit less catastrophes that were with brew in a bags and stuff of running like dry elements. You can have certain piping going certain ways, so you have it going back into your system two or three times, that, you know, that level's never going to get below the element. So plus I really want to have like a 4-hour brew day.
Yeah. Who doesn't want to cut down the brew day? Also reduce your risks of, like you talked about, scorching, burning out your elements, having more control over your actual brewing vessel, I think is one of those things where if you want that kind of control, brew in the bag is definitely the way to go. And a lot of people are going back to brew in a bags that had the 3-kettle system, that, you know, they've had their experience with, you know, the 7-hour brew days. And now they're just, you know what, let me go back to the stovetop. Let me try and simplify things almost to the point where you're a beginner again, of just making it simple for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's all about. Just getting your time back. Cause you also get jealous. I'm at a homebrew club meeting. They're like, oh yeah, I like started at like 11 o'clock. I finished like 3 o'clock. I'm like, I am up at like 6 o'clock in the morning, heating this water up, and I'm not getting finished until like 2-3, and I'm like, oh,
yep.
I'm so envious.
It is a slog sometimes, I feel like, for sure. So, how long after you started brewing? And you kind of shared a little bit of the origin story on your brewing name with me, but how long after you started brewing did you think, like, oh, I should name myself? Or was it kind of just like that spur of the moment thing where you're like, oh, this is cool, I'm just going to name myself?
I should name myself.
So it was funny, actually, because I looked up on my Untappd to see when I had the beer, and I had that beer 3 months before I actually started my first brew day. So where I got the name off of. And I was just like, I saw the name and I'm like, that's a great name. And it just stuck in my head. And I was like, all right, if you're going to start brewing, just keep it in the back of your head. Just like, you know, I would just say the name over in my head all the time. And I'm like, calculate risk. And I'm like, started brewing. And I think like maybe like 6 months after that, I jumped on Instagram or something like that. And I was like, all right, that's the name of the brewery. And
yep. Do you remember what kind of beer that was?
It was an IPA.
Oh, well, I guess I should have. I probably should have guessed that one.
Of course it was an IPA, Shannon. Of course, okay? You're not going to go ahead and have a really great epiphany on any other beer than
an IPA.
You're
just biased about IPAs, James.
You know, there's a reason why there's so many of them, you know? There's so many things you can do.
Yeah, it's just, it's all for you, James. It's all for you.
It wasn't the best beer I had, but it was a great name that came out of it, though.
That's, I mean, I guess it was worth it then, right?
It was.
Now, one of the things I like best about brewing is not only trying to decide what style you're going to brew, but also to be able to brew to someone else's style that you know might drink your home brew that, you know, enjoys a style they can't find. Have you had any of those experiences with your friends of, hey, you know, I've been really looking for a dunkel and no one has them because it's not in season. Have you had that in your area or not so much?
Not so much. Most of my friends just started getting into like the craft beer. So like some of them don't know, you know, an IPA from a New England or a hazy from a New England. Cause I, you know, you guys being in Massachusetts, I think of a hazy IPA, just a hazy IPA compared to what, like, I feel like a real New England is like a, like something coming out of Treehouse or Trillium or something like that, compared to someone that just makes an IPA that's has a lot of protein haze in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. So in your, New Jersey's not that far, which I don't think we said, you're from New Jersey, but yes. It's not that far from Massachusetts. Do you feel like the beer scene is different in, or maybe you haven't had as much experience with the Massachusetts beer scene, but I mean, we are very, I feel like IPA heavy in this area. Do you feel like that is the same in Jersey, or is there more of a variety when you go out to the local craft breweries?
I feel like there's more of a variety coming out to the breweries over here. They just passed a couple laws to make it easier for breweries to have like events and everything to come over. So, and food trucks and stuff, because before we weren't allowed to have any of that.
Oh, interesting. Over here.
Yeah, you couldn't have a food truck there. You couldn't have like a paint and sip or, you know, a D&D night. Oh. So that just started, you know, you guys, even now in Pennsylvania and New York, they, you know, have a lot more social activities that they can have at the breweries. And they just opened that up for us over here. I think beer wise, everything's pretty solid across the boards. Everybody, some places tend to stick to just like making IPAs all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a couple that do really good variety. I think there's from north to south, there's a bunch of good breweries that can hit all the notes on most of the beers.
It's a long state, so.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty shocking that, you know, they didn't allow at breweries being so close to New York, and you would think that they would be a little bit more progressive in terms of what they would allow at the breweries, but I don't know.
I mean, I'm surprised, and I was like, I'm learning something new. You learn something new every day, because in Massachusetts, we have, like, we're not allowed to have happy hours, because a bill was passed in the 80s that outlawed happy hours. So we can't have like drink specials at 5 o'clock, or whatever. And I feel like in most surrounding states, that's not the case. So I'm surprised to hear that Jersey had stricter laws than us when it comes to that type of situation at breweries, because we've had, I feel like, you know, there's yoga, there's bar classes, there's paint and sip. I saw Castle Island near us is having paint your own bong night.
Oh my gosh.
Like there's like such a variety.
That's wild. That is wild.
So it's like there's such a variety here. I'm just surprised to hear that other states in our like almost adjacent, you know, area don't have similar offerings. But I mean, it sounds like you'll get them now, but maybe you'll go to that paint your own bong night. You never know.
Yeah, you never know.
Shannon's just all about painting bongs.
I just saw that the other day and I was like, oh, this is so interesting.
That's such a bizarre.
Never would have thought to have that as an activity, but okay. Gotta appeal to the masses, James. So one of the things we kind of chatted about was you serving beer at festivals. I know currently you're not doing as many, but just tell us about your experience serving beer at festivals, kind of if there's any advice you give to folks who may be thinking about it, and if there's anything they should keep in mind in terms of, you know, storage of the beer, or anything like that.
Shannon, way too many questions.
Sorry, I got excited.
Way too many questions here. Why did you decide to start sharing beer at festivals?
One festival that I always pour at down in Tennessee called the Hoppy Possum. They just followed me on Instagram one day, and I followed them back. It was just after COVID, and I was just looking at it. I'm like, this seems like a fun little trip.
Mm-hmm.
And they open up February. They open up applications. You put an application in, And then they picked 75 brewers, beer, cider, mead, all come down and you just pour for everybody. I got picked 2 years ago. I got picked again last year, and I got picked again this year. So this will be my third time in a row going down there. It's just a fun time. First year, I didn't know what to expect at all. Mm-hmm. I had my car packed with everything and anything you think of. If there was a problem that was going to go on, I made sure I had either pieces or to fix it, my tools, like everything. And you get down there and they're like, all right, sign in and go. Like, all right, now first time you're like, oh my god, you start setting up your tent and making sure your tables and get your ice and stuff like that. I will say with them, they do a really good job overall with the whole festival. But probably one of the best things I like down there is that they actually have cold storage for you.
Oh wow!
So you know, we leave on a Friday around like 3 o'clock in the morning. We get down to Tennessee just in time for them to open up the cold storage, and we drop our kegs off in the cold storage, and then we go back to our hotel room, and then we the night before they have a brewer's night at a brewery. All the brewers come out, and all the homebrewers come out and have a couple drinks until the festivities tomorrow starts.
That's cool. So how long does it take you to drive from Jersey to Tennessee, and how do you keep the beer relatively cool in that journey?
In seatbelts too, right? You secure the kegs and seatbelts?
Yes, everything's packed into my Subaru.
See? Subaru's James.
See, there you go. We're a Subaru family as well.
Yep, everything's packed into my Forza Sport. I just got a trailer hitch so I can get like a little like 4x6 tow along trailer so I can take all the junk out of there, put it into the trailer so I don't feel like I'm like a clown driving my car up to the steering wheel.
I got everything. I got kegs of beer. I got my Spider-Man suit in the back. I got all kinds of things.
Doing 75 down the highway, and I'm like,
please don't get pulled over, because then you'll really smell like you've been boozing all the way from Jersey.
Please don't get pulled over. Please don't stop short anybody. Please don't stop short.
Oh, God.
Now, did you have to do any, like, permits, or that they just take care of all of that, and once you sign up, that's, like, you don't have to do anything else, like, as far as you serving your beer at this event, or how did that work for this particular event?
So, the only thing you have to get when you go down there is a server's permit, and it's good for 5 years. It's just a test you take online, you watch a couple videos, it takes about, like, 2-3 hours, because you have to watch all the videos, and then you go, you take the test. You're not allowed to serve beer without a server's permit.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's the same in Massachusetts. I remember having to do that before I was a bartender.
Once the 5 years is up, you just renew it, take the test again, I believe. But that's the only thing you need. And then whoever's with you, too. So my wife comes down with me. The first year, you know, she was with me, so she had to get a server's permit. But if she didn't have a server's permit, and like say I had to like run to the bathroom real quick. Mm-hmm. She couldn't serve anybody. Like nobody could, like she would just have to sit there and like look at people if they wanted beer. Like, oh, can I get a pour? I'm like, no, I can't. My husband's over there. You have to wait for him to come back. So
you better hope he goes to the bathroom real fast.
you better hope. Yeah. So that's like one thing. If I would say, if you're ever going to do this festival, make sure to get the permit. And then if someone's come, one or two people are coming with you, mm-hmm. make sure they have the permit so they can just pour for you. So, you know, it at least gives you a break to, like, just, like, wander around, maybe talk a little bit and come back. For when we transport, we have these keg koozies that we put the kegs in. So the kegs stay in my keyser until it's time to go. So mm-hmm. I pack the whole car up, and the last thing that goes in the car are the kegs. So at 3:30 in the morning, I grab all my kegs out. I put them in a big keg koozie. I got them on Amazon. I believe it's a keg cooler or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about. For those who don't know what he's talking about, they're legit ginormous koozies that fit. You fit the keg, pony keg, inside the koozie. It zips up, and it's got these little, like, cool, almost like the packing, you know, packing, not peanuts, refrigerated, like, things that you can refrigerate.
You're doing something with your hands that
I'm
don't know.
I'm doing something with my hands, and I'm just trying to describe what, you know, like that sealed air that you get in some of those packages where it's like those little like rectangular shaped things, but it's like an ice pack.
Air packets.
But then it's not air. It's like ice packs you put in the fridge or freezer. Keeps it
cold.
Yeah,
like the gel
ice
packs. And
it's got like a nice big strap going around it so you can like throw two on your back and look like you're scuba diving.
Okay. That's cool. Does yours have straps on them?
Yes, it does.
Oh, wow.
But I bring a little hand truck with me, and I tie them to the hand truck, and then I bring them over when I need to unload them and load them.
You're like, come on, children, get in the car now. We're going.
The kids are like, but Dad, there's no seatbelts left. Oh, the
no, the beer is the children, James.
The children just have to get in the back in the trunk.
The beer or the children? Like can you go in the HOV like lane with the beer is the question. Does that count as another body? Just beer.
I hope so.
That'd be awesome. Just dress one up in like a wig, like make it look like one of those the people that do the mannequins in their car, and just put the keg in the front seat and put like a little face on it and stuff. It'll be fine. You'll never get stopped.
Just put a little mustache on it and just keep driving.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll never know the difference. You're just like, it's just my square brother. It just doesn't.
Now, did you already have planned out what beers you were specifically going to bring to the festival, or you just kind of brought what you had brewed or had around the time of the festival?
For that, I plan out because you have to bring a minimum of 10 gallons down with you. Mm-hmm. So I have 40 gallons of beer coming down with me for the last two times. This year, I might be bringing a third beer, so I'll have like 60 gallons of beer coming down.
Wow. It's a lot of beer.
So yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. So I plan it out. I figure out when's it going to be the mature enough by that time. So, you know, some beer I'll start, I'll make like, I have a rye IPA make that I'll brew like end of August. And that would go, that went with me the one year, and just in time to go down. It was perfect. It wasn't too green. It was fine, like settling in. Mm-hmm. And last year I made a wee heavy that I took down that I brewed in like June, because I just had to let it, I had a keg it and just let it sit for 3 months.
Let it simmer. So it was,
yeah. So with the festivals, it's more planning going on with your brew days instead of just like, hey, I want to brew a pastry stout today. It's like, all right, the festival is September. Mm-hmm. All right, when's this beer going to be at its best point for everybody to drink and they're going to enjoy it the most? All right, I got to get it on the calendar. I got to brew this beer by this day.
Yep.
If not, then, you know, you're missing your time slot. And then if you're trying to maybe figure out another beer that you can brew, that might be a little bit, takes a little bit less time to be mature enough to bring down. So it's a lot of thinking and planning going on. And then, you know, when you bring it down, then you're going up against, you know, 75 other brewers and about maybe like 150 beers altogether. Usually every brewer brings down two beers. Max you can bring down is three for them. Three that you get judged on, but you can bring like, if you have like a six tap jockey box, you bring like six beers down, but you're only going to get voted on three of them.
Now do you get to pick your best three out of those, or?
Yeah, well, on their website and stuff, when you register for the new year, you get picked, you list your three beers that you want to do, but you have up to the last 2 weeks before the comp, the festival to change it. So, gotcha. You know, the one beer's not doing well and you're bringing this other beer down with you, and you just want to see what that one's going to do with the brewers. Like, you want your Hefeweizen to, but your Hefeweizen feels really solid. Let me put down instead of this milkshake IPA. I thought that was going to be good, but I'll still bring it down to everybody, try out and see what happens.
Yeah, get some feedback at least. Mm-hmm. So now, beyond the typical beer equipment, so obviously some way to serve the beer and to keep it cool, things like that. Is there one thing you would recommend people who are going to serve at festivals bring? Like, is there like a handy gadget or something that you're like, oh, you definitely need towels? Like, is there something like that that you would recommend?
Other than like the usual stuff you see, like jockey boxes.
Yeah, like other than the usual, like that type of stuff.
A glass rinser.
A glass rinser. Okay.
I made a glass rinser for last year, and it's a lot of people don't wash their glasses out, so you can just grab it from them, and it's right there. You just rinse it out, drain pan, and it just goes. You put a little bucket underneath, and it drains right out.
Awesome.
That's a really good point too, and it would really make a difference on how they're gonna experience your beer as well. So it's only to your benefit to have a nice clean glass if the festival is using, you know, your 5 ounce taster glassware, like the one we went to in Minnesota. Yep. Because I did notice that too, come to think of it, like we would go to one of the breweries and we'd have like the thick maple stout that was like 14%.
Yep.
And it'd be like syrup thick, and then we would drink it, and then there'd be that little bit of residue left in that glass. And then when we go to the next brewery, if you're going to a double IPA after that, I mean, that IPA is going to be like, oh, I'm getting a hint of maple in this, in this IPA. It's like, really? That should, you should not be tasting that. But we did see a lot of people having the glass rinsers.
I don't remember the glass rinsers, but it was a long day.
It was just a blur for Shannon after that 12% maple stout.
No.
I understand that. From going to a lot of beer fests, knowing, you know, after a certain point, I'm not even rinsing out my glass. You know, you're just like, all right, just pour it in there. Let's go.
Yeah, hurry it up.
You know, as a brewer, knowing that, you know, some people aren't going to rinse their glass a lot, so at least you have a little bit of control over that to at least give them a nice clean glass that, you know, your beer can go into, and then they can taste it.
I'd be like, oh, this is fancy. This guy's got a glass rinser. So bougie over here.
You would legit say that.
I would.
You really would. Now, you mentioned the Jockey Box, and of course, you can't serve at a festival without a Jockey Box. I mean, it's one of those things where you can't show up with a little tube around your keg and a little party faucet, and they would just be like, what are you doing here? Like, you can't serve that way. So did you make your own Jockey Box, or did you go with some of these new companies out there that are catering to homebrewers trying to get into festivals and competitions, whether it's like the self-serve where it's already pre-built, you don't have to do anything? So which option did you go with?
No, I made my own Jockey Box. It was just more cost effective to make it yourself, I think, for some of the prices you see that are online, because some of them are $400, $500, $600 for a box. And
absolutely. And it also depends on how many beers you plan on having on tap as well. So clearly, if it's a one faucet, it's going to be a lot less expensive than your six taps. But the cool thing is, though, I think on both sides, is you can design it how you anticipate you being at the festivals. And by that, I mean, are the customers going to be able to pour themselves, which is far and in between. Like, I don't think I've seen one yet that that's how it goes, where basically the faucets will be facing the consumers.
I don't think you're allowed to serve yourself.
I mean, I haven't. So again, it's one of those things like where the companies that make these Jockey Boxes, they have the flexibility of, they either have the front of the Jockey Box being like your logo.
Well, I guess if you're going to be at your house, then that would make sense. But if you're at a festival, you can't let people just serve themselves.
Yeah. But I mean, maybe then you would have like your back. So like then you'd have your back to the customers when you're.
I think you need to refresh your server's license, James.
That's why I'm not serving these days. So, you
know. I've never seen it where they're serving themselves. I think
that's more a backyard barbecue type thing.
Yeah.
That's probably why they give that option. Because I was always wondering, why would someone choose to have the faucets facing the opposite way, where then you're going to have all the coil, like the backs of the Jockey Box where it goes into the keg, right where the customer can see it. So like they have different designs that way, where it's on the one side or two sides.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I've seen that where it's, you know, both of them are not in the front. So it comes from the back and then pours out the front. Mm-hmm. Some of them are, everything's in the front of the Jockey Box, your faucets and your beer in lines.
And so you've made your Jockey Box. Is there anything else in your brewery that you have made that is like your favorite?
That I've made, probably my Keezer, my six tap Keezer that I made.
How big
is that? That's probably that 12 cubic feet.
Oh, I was going to say six taps. That has to be a big boy.
Yeah.
It has to be a big boy. James, interesting.
Didn't like my use of the word big boy, but.
When I was looking at building one, I was looking at prices. And at the time for like a little seven one that would do like two or three beers, you know, it was like $300, $350. And then for like a 12 cubic foot, it was like $500 with free delivery. So I was like, all right. I said, let's go with the bigger one, because then I can, I use it for storage for, you know, my beers and stuff like that. And I carbonate in my Keezer. So some people roll it on the floor. I just put it in my Keezer. I set it to whatever level of carbonation I need for that temperature. And then I put it on, and then I tell the beer, I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Good night.
And hope to God I don't run out of CO2 in the meantime.
Exactly. Never had a problem with my carbonation with that. That's actually been probably one, like, the just waiting, I would say, if you're able to wait. Mm-hmm. that's probably one of the best ways for carbonation. Just let it nice and slow take it in, and then I've never had a problem with less carbonated or too highly carbonated.
And now, one of the things when you're building the Keyser, that did you consider different regulators for your CO2 so you can have different PSI for your different styles that you're going to have? Did you have different valves to kind of cut down on the amount of leak potential for CO2? So if, say, the tank, you know, gets blown out on one of them, it doesn't go and ruin the rest of your beers? Or what's something you specifically did to your Keyser so that, you know, to improve how the beer is being stored in there?
Right now for my serving, I have a 7-tap manifold in there. So each beer I can manually set to whatever pressure I want. So if I have like a Heffenweizen that needs to be really highly carbonated, like 2.7 or 2.8 or even the threes. And then right next to it, I can have like a stout at like 2. So that's something that I really wanted to put into it. I also have some electrical stuff in there so I can have my Plato kegs hooked up running all inside the box. So there's no external wires like power cords coming in or anything. Everything's in a junction box tied into that with an outlet. I ran LED lights in there with fans and an automotive relay that when you open up the lid, the lights turn on and it cuts the fans off. And then when you put the lid back on, it cuts the lights off and turns the fans back on to keep the circulation going for the temperature controls and stuff. So I kind of planned it out for a bit to figure out what would work best, and then just doing my research online on like Homebrew Talk and stuff like that. So I have that, and then I have one extra one is just for my keg that's going to get hooked up to my canning system that I have running through there, because I have a little extra port that I made with my jockey box through shank, and that's tied right into my tap cooler. So I can just keg cold, counter pressure keg it, and then right there just can it, it's seaming, and then it's ready to go.
Yeah, I think that's great that you are able to really hone in the Keyser on how you want it. I know a lot of people, they just build a basic box, and then they find, all right, well, I can't check the pressure. I should have did a 5 regulator instead of a 4. Or they're trying to figure out which beer was on which lines, and it's all, you know, tangled up. So it's good that you kind of had a map out of how you wanted to build it. And I think it's really cool that you even thought of cutting the fans out and putting the lights so that you weren't blowing all that cold air out and wasting a lot of, you know, all that cold energy. Air and energy.
Yeah.
But also being able to see what you're doing while you're trying to hook in these kegs and making sure you're not hooking the CO2 to your outlet instead of the inlet and beer line to the wrong one and, you know, those types of things.
No, exactly. That's what the lights are there for. Just so I can just have a good visual of what's going on. Maybe any condensation or, you know, maybe a wire pulled off somewhere on the Plato kegs and it's not hooked up. At least I can see. And when I have to actually shut it down and clean it, at least I can have the lights on and my system off and still, you know, be inside and clean up and see what I'm doing.
That's awesome. I think that's a super smart move. I think you should also make it so the lights can change color.
I'm sure they can.
Make it like a party.
I was thinking about that. I saw the changing lights and I'm like, oh, this might be cool. And I'm like, all right, what do I have to wire this into? And I'm I'm done wiring.
Yeah, it's over. Too late. That's cool.
That's where you just got to wire it so you can just say, pour me a beer, and you press it and then it just goes and flicks a switch and starts pouring a beer for you.
Automated. Yeah.
The beer bot 3000.
A dream. A dream system. Start working on it.
The dream kegger, the Keyser.
Yeah, I gotta get on that.
The big boy Keyser.
Note for later.
And then whenever I have my tap list on my Fire TV, so, you know, if I need to see what beer it is, I can just go on my phone and click on the link, and it'll just show me what beer's down there and how much is actually left in the keg.
Oh, nice. That's really cool.
Now, that's from what using the Play-Doh, which is a little round circular thing that you basically weigh out your kegs to make sure that then it regulates how much liquid is actually left by weight, right? So that's how you're able to tell how much you have left. Yeah, really cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah, and it integrates into Taplist.io. So it integrates into that. Like right now on my stat, I have like 1.8 gallons left, so getting kind of low on that. So I feel like it's a good technology to have, because you will know when you're going to get low.
Yeah.
Instead of just usually how it was back in the day,
You just lift it.
Just guess.
Guess. Say, oh, like, man, this is starting to look a little like super like just yeast cake, or, you know, it's looking a little rough. I think it's time. It's at the bottom of the keg.
Or like one day you're feeling super strong. So you're like, oh, this is pretty light. There must not be a lot left. And then the next day you're not feeling as strong and you're like, oh, there's actually a lot more in here than I thought there was going to be. James, I feel like if we had that system at our house, though, you would be like John Tafford, like
seeing who's
like
drinking,
measuring,
out of it.
Like
I'm gonna bust open the keyser, check open the.
There was 5 gallons of beer in here, and now there's only 3. And I totally would. So before we wrap up, just a kind of a, I don't know if it's a softball question, but if you could go back and remake any beer that you've made in the past, what beer would it be and why? So your job depends on it. That's the answer.
That would probably be. I'm actually going to make it for going down to Tennessee because I've been thinking about it for about like 2 years. It's a farmhouse saison I made with mango and kefir lime leaves.
Oh, wow. That sounds good.
We brewed it once and it came out phenomenal. Then I haven't brewed it again.
I was going to say, why did you stop brewing it then? Yeah.
I brewed other stuff for competitions and it's just, I never got back to it. And I was just like, I need to brew this beer. I need to brew this beer again.
Life happens, you know?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say because it's too damn expensive. And some of those, my favorite beers that I've made, I'm like, man, the amount of money for this one beer I'm making is crazy.
It's a 5-gallon batch, and I'm like $65 into this beer right now. I'm like, oh.
You're like, do I want to take this one to the festival or should I save this for myself?
Yeah, share it with the world, James. Share it.
Sharing's caring.
Sharing is caring, especially when it comes to this beer.
Well, we couldn't let you go, Chris, without doing a game that's appropriate for your name.
Oh.
It's going to be called Calculated Risk.
Oh, God.
So we're going to give you 2 options, 2 scenarios, and you have to pick which risk you would rather go with as a brewer. Okay. You ready for this?
James, you're all... This is your
jam. This is my stick right now. This is my stick.
I'm just going to sit back and watch.
So it's a Calculated Risk here with Chris. So here we go. Ready? Okay. Using the wrong yeast or using the wrong hops?
Oh.
Wrong hops.
All right. Brewing in a bag or brewing in a bag that burns?
What?
It was a trick question.
Why would you want a burn?
Calculated risk. I thought he was going to say a burn bag. Okay, Shane?
Why would you say? Oh, my God.
Okay.
Okay. I feel like I'm playing.
Leaving
a
keg out in the sun for a day or leaving the keg out overnight in freezing temperatures, like below 0.
That's a hard one.
God.
I'd probably have to go leave it below 0.
That's what I was going to say, too. Good answer. Yeah. Good answer.
Good answer. Yeah, right. Because what's the alternative, right? You're going to, if you leave it out in, you know, the below temperature, either your beer's going to explode because it's so cold if it's in cans. But if it's in a keg, it'll just be, it's just going to suck out all that CO2. So it's going to be a super flat beer.
Yeah.
And at least it'll be cold. It won't be skunked.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, I was going with either going to be skunked or just I'm going to have to let it de-thaw for like a week.
Yeah.
All right. My last calculated risk. You enter a competition and you enter the wrong beer in the wrong category, or you're at a festival pouring and you accidentally spill the beer that they wanted you to bring.
Like all of the beer?
All of the beer. So like you show up and you literally have like just enough to pour for
like
five people.
Like you got
like
pulled over by the cops and the beer went everywhere?
Yeah, no. Oh, that would be a good scenario too.
I probably have to enter the wrong beer.
Yeah.
Shane's going, yeah, of course.
Well, you have no beer.
Well, okay. All right. You have enough beer for the like the first 5 people in line and then it just goes and all your CO2 is just out and you're like, uh-oh. Okay.
Oh no, I would take entering the wrong beer.
Yeah, that was kind of too easy too.
That's just.
I thought I was lobbing softballs.
Yeah. Wow. You just sit there for six hours, like.
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on?
I'm here. This is me.
Yeah, this is me. Hi guys.
I'm the problem.
You want some stickers and some koozies for the other brewers that are here?
You want a coaster?
Yeah.
Here you go.
It tastes great. Make sure to wash it down with some other guy's beer. Okay. Well, I think that was a good calculated risk. I think that's a good. Thanks, James, for that. Maybe with Chris's permission, we'll have to make that a regular segment. We'll say.
Oh yeah, you guys could do that.
Calculated risk, TM Chris.
TM Chris.
Okay. Well, before we wrap up, do you want to let everyone know to find you on Instagram or any other social media platforms?
Everybody can check out my Instagram. If they want to throw me a follow and everything, at Calculated Risk Brewery. That's all I'm on right now. Nothing really else. It's just, you know, nice to put a hobby out there, and, you know, you meet a lot of nice people, even on Instagram, a lot of nice people in the community follow you. Very helpful. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if anybody's even thinking about starting the homebrew, yeah, check it out. Follow a couple people on Instagram that homebrew, and they're more than happy to divulge their whole process to you for hours and hours.
Whether you want to hear it or not.
Whether you want to or not.
Exactly.
Okay, great. Well, we want to just say thank you again for coming on. We really appreciate it. Well,
thank you guys so much for having me.
And before we sign off, don't forget to check out our merch. Go to the link on our Instagram to access the site. And there you can find podcast merch as well as our Brew Another Day Initiative products.
And make sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you can listen to your podcast.
That really helps us get new listeners, and we appreciate it. This has been Double Hop Beat. Catch you on the brew side.